Feral Audio.
What happened? What's happening? Hello. I just wanted to start my show in a different way than saying, it's time for another episode, but it's time for another episode of Drogi's Minor Revelations. That's how creative I am right now, you guys. I just said, what happened? What a great way to start a show. What happened? Starting with just like chaos and, accidents. Hello. It's July. Can we believe it? It's July. That's nuts. I'm almost on my 1 year anniversary of the show, even though we've only had like 35 episodes or something, because we're, I am horrible about keeping this up every week. But it's been a great year. I always love July because in LA, it means Outfest, which is what I'm going to talk about a little bit, because I promise you I'm not paid or endorsed by this organization, other than they've been so good to me. It's LA's LGBT film festival, and it opening night is tonight. I think this episode goes up tomorrow. We'll figure this out. But go to outfest.org if you are in LA in the next 11 days. It's an incredible festival. Every year there's just this wide swath of things to choose from. It's 35 years old this year, so happy 35th, Outfest. So since I want to say like 2010, they've been just a huge part of my life. I've been lucky to have been in a bunch of shorts and films, and I've been able to host the awards a couple years, and I even won an award several years ago, and so like it's been an incredible organization. They not only do they show new films that are LGBT or queer or adjacent, I love that they've really broadened their sort of definition of what a film that would play at Outfest would be. It might be a queer filmmaker, or it might be like a queer storyline. It's very broad in a really kind of awesome, inclusive sense, I think. But on top of that, they host screenings of classics that you may have missed, that are really important to sit in a room full of gay and gay friendly people, and watch together. There's a real power in sitting in the dark and watching a movie, and something that also that maybe shaped or defined a generation. A couple of years ago, I was embarrassed to admit that I had never seen Parting Glances, which is a gay classic. It's from 1986 and starring Steve Buscemi and Kathy Kinney, and just a wide array of incredible, beautiful people. It's a comedy about AIDS, and it came out in 1986. How daring to make a comedy at that time, but also how therapeutic. It's a beautiful film, and I had never seen it until just a few years ago at Outfest. They did a screening of it, and there was just something about sitting with all different generations, people older than me and people younger than me, many who had seen the movie several times, many people who, were defined by it in a lot of ways that just, it was so helpful for them at that time, and all the way up to people that, like me, who had never seen the film before. We just sat and laughed and cried. There's like such an incredibly heart-ripping moment in the movie that's just so beautiful and so simple. It's about friends. It's a party about friends, and many of them have AIDS. Many of them are afraid of AIDS. They're tackling it. They're dealing with it. So and I promise it's funny. So that was something that I never probably would have seen, because it's not something you're gonna run over to Netflix and be like, hey, I need to just sit myself down and watch Parting Glances today. Even though you should. Even though I fully endorse doing that. So there are always those opportunities too, when you just sit down on like a Sunday afternoon at Outfest and see like a piece of your history and learn so much about the community. I learn so much about these lives and stories that I never knew were out there. And it's really powerful and really important now of all times to tell that story and to share that with people, and not just for people to watch at home, but to actually go out and be together and watch it together in a theater, and then drink lots of vodka together and process and to see that we have these incredible stories that need to be shared. That's all. Go to Outfest. All right, let's have a show. Oh my God, I completely forgot to promote my event at Outfest. I was so busy talking about the rich cultural historical tapestry. I forgot to... Okay, if you are in LA, I am hosting the 4th annual alongside the incredibly wonderful, hilarious, you love him, of course, Dave Holmes. He and I are hosting Bad Movie Night as a part of Outfest on Thursday, July 13th. It's at 9:45, and it's at the Red Cat, which is downtown. It's on 2nd Street. So what we do is, this is the 4th year in a row that we've done it. We, after a week of watching really important, textured, layered, like I said, important films like Parting Glances or whatever, we find the worst possible gay movie that we can find. And I mean, Dave Holmes can dig deep, you guys. He finds these things that are, I mean, you think you know deep cuts, you have no idea. If you know anything about Dave Holmes, like, you just sit back and let him take over. He knows what's up. So we find really, really terrible movies. And then we have an awesome lineup of panelists. This year we have Calpurnia Adams, who's done this show before. We know and love her. Alexandra Billings, who I adore, who I would love to have on this show at some point. So the two of them will be sort of joining Dave and myself to watch and comment on the worst gay movie ever. That is Thursday, July 13th. At 9:45 at the Red Cat downtown. You can get tickets on outfest.org. Come join us. Oh, and there's drinks before and after and always. Well, hello, you two. How are you?
Great.
Good. Oh, wonderful. Great.
Hello.
I'm sitting here with the lovely Mary Holland.
Hi.
And the wonderful Keaton Savage.
Hello.
Oh my God. You both have, we were doing a little sound check earlier and we were testing out our voices. And I was just thinking, you both have really lovely voices.
Oh, that's so
it's
nice.
True.
That is sweet.
I mean, not like we've had real garbage throats on here before, but it was just really nice. You both have very comforting timbres. To your voice.
Thank you.
Yes. Mary, where are you from originally?
I'm from Galax, Virginia.
Okay, I knew you were Southern. Okay, good. So Galax, which, I mean, my God, best name ever. I mean, not to be rivaled with like Gastonia, North Carolina, which
is also
one of my favorites.
Which is, I think, close to Galax, if I'm not... Because Gastonia near Winston-Salem?
No. Gastonia is near Charlotte.
Not far.
So
yeah.
I'm like, but not far. I mean, closer than we are here.
Drew, I don't want to fight. Okay? I'm trying.
So let's say goodbye to Mary Holland.
Okay,
that was great.
This was a lot of fun.
That's really, really... So Galax is near Winston-Salem, is that right?
Yeah. It's maybe like... an hour away.
Okay, so near Greensboro.
Okay. Charlotte. Charlotte, we used to, if we had to travel, the closest airports were Greensboro or Charlotte.
Or Charlotte.
Sometimes we
Charlotte,
flew out
was
of Charlotte
is more southern than Greensboro.
Yeah.
So, and I lived in Martinsville, Virginia. Do you know where that is?
Ooh,
it's in Henry County. I don't remember. I think it is closer to Greensboro, though.
Is Danville close?
Danville is close.
Yep. Okay, great.
So that's kind of where Galax is?
Mm-hmm. Around there,
I vaguely remember
Roanoke.
Okay. Sure.
Frickin' Blacksburg is up around there.
And then there's King's Dominion. Is that in Roanoke?
That King's Dominion, I think, is closer to Richmond.
Richmond, that's it. It's in Richmond.
But
that's
Carowinds
right.
Carowinds.
Way in Charlotte.
Haunt.
So we're jumping
ours.
All around the Virginia.
We really are.
I'm learning
North
a lot
Carolina
over here.
Bush Gardens, I think, is also near Richmond.
Sure. I remember
sure.
all of it. You don't meet that many people from Virginia.
No, I know.
Do you? I mean, because you're from there, you might maybe pick it up on it more, but...
I have met a few. I mean, I've met a few, but every time it's like, oh!
I know.
I'm so delighted to meet someone from there, because I do feel like there is a big North Carolina contingent of people here.
There like, are. There are. That's why. That's why I say that, because I do feel like I do meet a lot of people from North Carolina. Here.
I don't from Virginia though.
Yeah.
Not too
and there's
much.
A big weird. There's a weird. Keaton, I'll just. Or there used to be a weird rivalry between Virginia and North Carolina. Like my mom was from South Carolina, and when we lived in Virginia, like that was more considered more classy to be from South Carolina than from North Carolina.
Right.
I don't know if they equate that to like it's the North. It's Yankees. I don't really understand that
rivalry. I don't
really
understand it either.
And I wonder if it's even happening so much anymore. If the old South. Garden and gun community is just really holding on tight.
Yeah.
There's so many layers in the South. It's so strange.
There really
it's
are.
Not really. I mean, I think that the perception is, you know, a lot of it is correct. And then a lot of it is, I mean, I love the South and I love going back and visiting whenever I can. And I do too. Yeah.
It has a real, it has a sort of haunted quality to it where there are these layers of, and so many horrible things happen there. And then it's such a nostalgic part of the world.
Uh-huh.
Like it's so backwards facing.
Yep.
In so many ways. And, you know, I think that leads to a lot of like layers of, you know, sentimentality and sort of tradition and
oh, yeah.
There's
manners
a real,
are such
manners,
a big part of it.
Yeah,
yes, yes.
Etiquette.
Uh-huh.
It's really a unique, very unique place.
It is bizarre. It's trapped in time.
It is.
In all the best and all the absolute worst ways. But so it's just like sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Keaton Savage, you're from here.
I'm
you?
Literally from Burbank, California.
Oh,
all right. So
you were born in the studio.
Right here, yes, correct. That's right at this moment. They used to say Burbank born, Burbank bred, Burbank dead. It was a thing that people would say. And I now live in Los Feliz. So,
ooh, so they were
really
wrong.
Far.
They were very wrong.
So they were wrong.
You moved away to far Los Feliz.
Mm-hmm,
which is
really
a good 20 minutes down
wrong.
The street. Just down the 5 and we're home.
Yeah, Burbank has become a character in your podcast.
It really is a huge character in the show, and I do love it. I didn't really spend that much time here until I started doing.
Well, why would you unless you were a kid moving to be an actor
or
from
you're wherever. In the, you know, working at the Warner Brothers studios or whatever, one in multiple studios that are here. But
that's
you know.
True. That's true.
Anyway, yeah. And you've worked as a child actor.
Yeah.
Since you were
it's
a child.
It's kind of weird. My grandma moved here with her 3 kids when she was like 23, like recently divorced.
Oh, wow.
She took all of her kids from Michigan and moved out here and kind of put them all into the business and became like a manager for them and then started a children's agency off of my dad and aunt and uncle, and they're now all in therapy dealing with that now, which is cool.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
But yeah, it was the Savage Agency.
Yes,
and so
of course.
Keaton Savage with the Savage Agency. So
yes.
Like, I
and
had
you
red hair.
Are, now, and I know I've asked you this before. Fred Savage, is that, are you related to Fred? Or,
no.
Okay, no. So that's a different family.
Yeah, they came up at like the same time.
Okay.
So
because they're a family
they
too,
so.
Right? Like it's like, right?
Yeah, don't, Ben and Fred.
Ben,
and,
that's right. Okay, yeah, that's right.
Ben,
that's
did
not,
I say Ben and Fred?
No,
Bed
you said
and
Ben and Fred.
Okay, well then I said Ben and Fred. After that, so.
But that, he was Boy Meets World, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Then, yeah.
And that's the
Fred's the director now.
And Fred is director now, yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And of course, you know, a lovely Wonder Years. And he's in a new show called Friends from College or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're promoting.
He was in the
Other Savages.
He was in the
Oh, sure.
That's right.
I think he's wonderful. I love him in The Rules of Attraction. He plays like a heroin addict,
yeah.
Like student in bed. Like, it's such a weird role, and I love that he's great in it. why are we talking about the Other Savages when we have this
I don't know.
Savage here?
Always upstaging me.
Rivaling Savages.
So were you involved in the... So is the agency still...
It's still around.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you were... So your grandmother had 3 kids, and then one of her kids was your parent.
My dad, yeah.
Your dad. Okay.
It was bizarre. Yeah, it's bizarre. They all worked until they were like 18, and they kind of supported the family. I mean, it was
right.
Like, she would flip houses and stuff, too, to stay afloat. That was sort of how she built the business.
That's amazing.
But, yeah, like in the 90s, they were like the number one like kids agency. They're still like doing great, but... At that
right.
time, they were, it was crazy.
Was it something when you were a kid, you were like, I want to do this? Or were they like, yeah, you should do this?
It was a little of both. And yeah, my mom was really protective. She was like, oh, he has a play date, so he's not going to that callback. So that created a lot of tension.
That's great, though.
I love that. Which
are you are you happy for that in retrospect that your mom was that way?
Yeah. I think it's why I still love it and why I'm doing it now.
Yeah.
Because I got to do it and it was fun, but it wasn't my whole life.
Yeah.
So. No, but it's still, it's in you, like you, I mean, I know you and you have a real passion and love and talent for the, like in this, it's not like you're going, I forced against my, you know, it's like you hear these stories about these people that like, you know, it's like Elizabeth Taylor hated being on a set. I mean, these people that were like these let, you know, because they're forced into it from when she was a child. Yeah. And it was like miserable experiences. There's an amazing story that's published somewhere where she and I want to say Roddy McDowell were in Lassie when they were children and they were doing a snow scene. And instead of, they just couldn't reenact snow then. And so they numbed their faces. They injected their faces with some sort of numbing thing. And then they threw white cornflakes in their faces just repeatedly all day long as children. I mean, that's what child actors used to do. And so like they have horror stories about being a child actor, you know,
my God.
Which thank God there are laws that prevent those sort of things now.
Right.
You know, but there are a lot of people, you know, on the lower level, on different levels who are sort of forced into the business by like a stage mom or stage dad. And that is a whole different thing. I mean, I was the kid that wanted the stage mom
right,
and the stage
too.
Dad because I wanted it so badly that I wanted to be in the business. And I was like so mad that my mom wasn't as driven as I was. I mean, I saw Gypsy and I was like, she gets it. You know, like I didn't understand the horrible downside of like having a parent like that. And I did recently do something where I had to hang out with someone's parent who wouldn't stop going on and on about how amazing all of their children were and how talented all their children were. And I was happy on that one level that these people are supported, but I did not know how to be because my mom, as supportive as she is and loving and has always been so encouraging, is the first one. It's a very Southern thing, I think, too, to just, you know, to be like, we're not going to get above our raisin. We're
right,
not
right,
act
right,
like
right,
we're the
right.
best.
Right. No,
so
for sure.
So my mom will find a way to just be like, well, he didn't, yeah, you should have seen him at home. Like, she'll find a way to offset that out of you know, and not out of a way to insult me and knock me down, but out of just a way of like, we don't talk about ourselves. It's out of modesty.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and it's very hard I've had to combat that as a Southerner and like moving out to LA and having to be like, oh, right, I have to own that I'm good at what I do and I don't want to act too proud. And because I'm still riddled with like Presbyterian North Carolina.
The guilt. You
know, the guilt of like, I don't want my light to shine too bright.
Yeah.
That would be just tacky.
It is that thing, even when someone gives you a compliment. Mm-hmm. I tried to get better about this, but my instinct is always, oh, find a way to dismiss it.
Yes,
like find a
yes.
way, like if someone's like, you look gorgeous today and every day, which I hear all the time. I'm like, oh, thanks. I've just been having this issue with my hair. Like I find a way.
Find a way.
Like,
I know. I'll do it too.
I don't know.
It's very hard for me to like plant my eyes and just say thank you.
Thank
I
you.
Accept the compliment because you know. But I see people that have this insane amount of confidence, and I've wanted that. I've been like, oh my God, I would die to have that, or I would die to have that mom or dad that pushed me out from an early age, like get out there and sparkle.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I know. I'm so thankful in retrospect that I did have parents who were like, you know, have manner or just like have some decency and have some interest in other things, you know?
Right.
Like I had to find this like love and drive and passion in myself because like my parents encouraged me to do anything but, you know,
right.
they were just like, oh, go, you know.
Well, and that's so special and that's such a different way into it too because I really was kind of like, here it is.
Uh-huh.
And then I happened to love it and I worked hard at it and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Both of you, it sounds like it's something that, which is most people, you have to fight for it and
yeah.
you have to really, really, right. really want it.
But you have to fight to keep it though. I mean,
totally,
like it's like
yeah.
a thing where it's like a lot of, and I know that a lot of child actors, like they sort of wake up one day and their series is over or whatever was going for them or puberty hits or whatever happens to them and they have to make that decision. And then they have a whole, I mean, I know actors who are like famous when they were kids and they have to combat that. They have to walk in the room and be like, oh, aren't you the kid from
right.
that 80s or 90s sitcom? And they're like, yep, I am. And now I'm 35.
But, and now
and,
I am a
you know,
human.
Right,
and I have
to, and I'm trying
life.
To be, right. And so, I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, I'm grateful that was never my my path as a child. It was never anything crazy. Actually, the last embarrassing thing I did, I quit before high school. I was like, I want to be in high school. And I did a reality show called In Search of the Partridge Family for VH1.
Okay.
They were trying to cast and do a, they're trying to bring back the Partridge Family in 2004.
Oh, because that was such a, you know, beautiful, incredibly nuanced show that was
it was just dying to come back. There was so much hunger for it. But yeah, it was Emma Stone was on that show.
Really?
That was the first thing that she like did before blowing.
Was she like the Susan Day? Was she like the what's her name? Laurie Partridge?
She was Laurie won.
Yeah, I was the runner up, guys. I did not win.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it was like a singing acting competition and it was set up like American Idol, but it was totally cast. Like,
so that was, was that Danny Bonaducci?
Yeah, I had to meet him and hang out with him.
Oh my God, that's a nightmare. That'll make you quit the business fast.
He fell off the wagon halfway through shooting.
Oh,
so then
wow.
just disappeared. And we were like, all right, I guess Danny's not coming back.
Okay, I guess.
I can't imagine. And also, like, you see these kids at, you know, at auditions or like, if you, like, are cast as a parent in something and you work with a kid, they're so... In my experience, they are so, they have unnatural levels of confidence and just like certainty about themselves.
I know.
Where it's like, oh man, I wish I was as confident as you, or I wish I had that when I was a kid. But then also I wonder if it's best. I don't know. I don't know what
I don't know
that
either.
looks like later.
I don't think it's good.
Well, you know, and I think it's like as someone who's not a parent and I'm always looking at kids going, no, no, no. And I'm like, I would, you know, you pretty much ruin your kids no matter what you do for them. That's pretty much, we've determined that like, okay. But, you know, I have a resentment and I'm realizing I'm not proud of this that I, about with a lot of LA kids that I see, whether they're actor kids or just kids of friends of mine or just like I meet like kids in Silver Lake and Los Feliz. And, you know, they're so allowed to live their truth from day one and be themselves. And it's like, you know, all the boys, you know, little boys have really long hair. You know, and I've that's amazing, but it's just I've noticed that like when I grew up, it was like you had to have the same haircut, and you go to and you don't have a choice in how you want your hair styled.
Yeah,
you know, and all this oppressive stuff that I grew up with. So I have I see these kids, and I was just recently at this sort of like gathering with like families and stuff, and there was this little girl, and she was kind of running the party, and it started like really cute because she was so precocious and she's adorable, and she was wearing like a really cute dress, and she knew it, and she wanted you to play with her. Dog and her dog was adorable, and then it was like, let's go for a walk, let's have chocolate now, let's do this, let's all watch Moana or whatever, and you're like, you know, how about we like don't do, you know what I mean, it's, you know, it's those things. And I realized it was my, and she was lovely, like the girl was lovely, it wasn't like she was a kid, and but I realized that I have my hang-ups about, like, she needs to be quiet. She needs to be, you know, sitting there, at, you know, or go upstairs and hide from us. And I'm like, I realize I it's my issue. It's not about, you know, but, and it's something that I've noticed a lot. I mean, I talk about this, and it's a sort of a slightly different thing, but I do, you know, it's, I do know that, like, older gay men look toward the, you know, to the younger gay kids and, like, look what you get to be right now. I would be punched in the face if I... You know, if I behaved that way. And so there's a weird, like, gay men have to deal with their own internalized homophobia in a way.
I think that has to do with, like, flippancy, too. Sort of, like, my generation of gays. A lot of the times people are like...
I don't need to know about that. I don't need to learn about that because, you know, it's
Like, managing the bar. I'm like, some twink is going to have to look up what managing is.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
Amazing. Like,
I know. I love
so
that.
I'm so grateful for that.
I know. Me too. And it's like... But it is a thing where you see with, you know, and... But the kids are now just, you know, in a beautiful way, just allowed to just be who they are and whatever they are. But then there are other times that, and again, I don't have an answer for this because there are other times when I'm like, I want to, you know, I think kids need to be spanked and told,
well, they
like,
need discipline
the
and
discipline,
they need structure.
Because kids need those things too. So I don't know about like with how everything is like, isn't my, you know, isn't my baby adorable all the time in everything that they do? I'm like, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're a little shit and they need to be told like, you know. And so where do you find that line? Where do you draw that line? I have no idea.
I don't either. And I also don't have kids. So all my...
I love it.
So
none
this
of us
is
do.
All.
We're talking parenting.
But anyway, I know everything there is to know about it. But the question I have in my mind is, I don't know what this sort of this sort of freedom and allowance to like live their truth at such a young age and have such confidence in like just making their choices about their life and not having any choices imposed on them. I'm just so curious what that looks like when it grows up.
Yes,
like,
yes.
What does good,
that?
Though.
Well, that's what I think, but I wonder. I mean, I can only imagine that it's good because who confidence is we all are striving to have it mm-hmm. and to know yourself. Like, I feel like these kids are encouraged to like have their identity so early.
The only thing that the I think the flip side is that you have to encourage them to be interested in other people and other people's truth and
what for sure
and,
yeah
and be interested in older people and what's come before them
right
because
and have deference
only say,
to that
yes because yeah. because the thing about that I you know it's like a lot for me as a kid I was told I was wrong you know no like and a lot of it. You know, obviously was, you know, I also feel like, you know, if you're looking for your truth, it will come through at some point. You will find it and you will look back and go, no, I was actually right about this and this and this, but I was wrong about this, this and this. And they were right in telling me I was, you know, so I think it's good to know that like if it's all about like, you know, telling a kid you are always right, you are always correct. The kid doesn't really spend much time looking outside of himself, herself. And also even within, right. you know,
I would
even
imagine
within, because they just think my instinct is right. I feel this. So I must be right at all times as opposed to going, oh, you know what? I'm just tired. I'm cranky about this because I'm hungry or I'm wrong about this. I needed to be illuminated. You know, I needed to learn about this. And so that is the only thing about it is I think just encouraging awareness.
Yeah.
Right.
Outside.
Yeah. I imagine with identity, like when it comes to being able to choose your own identity and that kind of a thing and being self-assured in who you are, that's probably going to be great. But if someone's not disciplining a child at all, that's a problem.
Yes.
I don't know if that's like a current theme. I don't have that many friends with kids who are... All my friends with kids are their babies. So there's not much parenting going on at this point.
Right.
Yeah, it's just interesting to... Because like I think about this a lot where so many... I was in therapy for a good chunk. I just recently stopped...
I'm sorry.
Congratulations.
I'm fixed.
Because you're here.
But in those conversations, it was really, I'm just so aware of how the smallest experience you have as a kid, something locks into place in your brain. Mm-hmm. And that like shapes how you look at the world forever.
Right.
And it's just so, they're so fragile and their perception of the world, everything is like, being put into this computer in their brains.
Right.
And
it's, it's fascinating to me that like we're all like sort of made of the same things, you know, and it is these experiences and genetics and all these different factors that come together that like shape us.
Yeah.
And then there's our soul, our personality that is within all of that. But yeah. And so like, I think like one of the most horrifying things about being a parent, aside from like just imminent danger around every corner, is that you can't protect your kids from that. And you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't, like, there's no way, you know, sheltering a kid. I mean, you know, if you meet people who are adults that are like kept from too many things, they're fucking weird at this point. Like, it's like as adults, it's like, oh my God, you weren't, you know. I mean, I don't know. I sort of got into it with someone who I found out, and I said a lot, but like he saw his first R-rated movie when he was 17. And I was like, I was 5. I don't know if that's better or but I feel like it's better than 17.
Yeah.
I was like, what were you doing as a teen? You waited until it was legal for you to watch an R-rated movie. That is, I'm sorry. I think that's very strange. And I was watching Valley Girl when I was 5. And so, which is really upset, whatever. But I do think too, like, you know, about all the, like, you know, there are a lot of things that as kids, like kids are all right. Like they can handle things. And a lot of times adults are like, they can't handle that. Right. They can't see that. They don't know. It's like kids like take in, like you said, little mini experiences and then they're major
things. And there's
things.
No way to shield them from that.
No.
Like there's no way something, your kid is going to have some sort of something about something. And there's, even if you are completely 100% perfect to them all the time and everything's mm-hmm. perfect, there's still going to be a micro thing that happens right, that yep. now locks something. Like, I'm going to cry about this one thing and my mom will look away for 1 second and I'm going to be like, okay, I have shame about that for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
Like, there's no way to protect them. So you just kind of have to, I think there's an acceptance you have to have about, like, there's things that are just going to happen and right. they're going to believe things. And all I can hope for is that they have awareness and self, you know, and the ability to communicate with me and with yeah. other loved ones in their life what they're feeling. And that's yeah. all I can hope for.
It's just crazy to realize that parents are just, you're making it up. You're making all of
oh
it.
Oh my God,
like,
yeah.
It's I mean, yeah, you're trying to be as honest with yourself and your children as possible. And you're just trying to instill whatever you can, but it's all, you're making it all up.
No, it's all improv. And it's like, you know, and when, you know, I realized it was, you know, when, as an adult, I could see my parents as just people and as adults. And, you know, you have so much more respect and understanding. Like,
completely.
They're doing the best they can. I'm like, you know, because as a kid, you're like, they are the authority. They must know everything. And it is that feeling of, like, there's no Santa Claus when you realize that your parent may have, like, failed in some way. It feels,
right.
very, it feels like a betrayal
right.
in a way. And it's like, maybe they didn't try to fail. They didn't, weren't doing it to overtly disappoint you. They're just people yeah. and they're doing the best that they can. And also they're sort of basing their parenting on their own parents. And a lot of times it's a reaction to their own parents. They're like, I'm not going to be my mom or my dad. So I'm going to parent you this totally different way. And, you know, and is there a perfect way? You know, you just have to be like, oh, I hope it all comes together. And
yeah.
And, you know, a lot of it too is like, I hope my kid doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I just think sometimes too, it's like,
some kids yeah. just suck.
Some kids suck.
Oh, like, some dogs just suck.
I mean, it's
suck.
My favorite thing about that play, The Children's Hour. Do you know that play, The Children's
yeah,
Hour?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, kids suck. Like, some kids just are rotten. Like, that isn't her name Mary?
I think
it is.
So,
like,
yeah.
the evil girl's like, little Mary. You know, and like, she's a bad seed. You know, she's a bad. Not to be confused with the bad seed. And mm-hmm. that is Rhoda. And she's bad because her mom is a, spoiler alert, was a serial killer. That's a whole different story.
It's genetic.
Whole different story. But that's the weird, if you, the bad seed's the weirdest thing ever. If you ever get a chance to see the movie or the play or whatever, it's insane. But Children's Hour, yeah, I just love that because that's the statement of just like, no, it's like, children, like, some children have this, like, evil thing in them, and children will destroy, and children will, you know, and
we need to talk about Kevin.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, that movie.
That's so
one of the
scary.
Best titles of any movie
Phenomenal.
Ever. Because
yeah.
the whole movie, you're going, you need to talk about
God,
Kevin.
Talk about
Why
Kevin.
Aren't you talking about Kevin? And Tilda Swinton, I mean, that's my fear as a parent, because that you've seen the movie too, Mary.
I know what it's about. I haven't watched it, but
Basically, Tilda Swinton plays a woman who should not be a mom, doesn't want to be a mom, has no interest in it whatsoever. But it sort of feels the pressure, like, okay, I guess I'll be a mom, and you know, and she's living in Los Feliz or
yeah,
Silver Lake
so.
Or something, yeah. And
John C. Reilly.
John
right?
C. Reilly is her husband, and they're both like these like smart, lovely, like, you know, great people. They have this baby, and from the second it's born, she and this baby have zero connection.
Oh, geez.
And it's like the baby, the screams of this baby every time he's with his mother. And then there's this amazing scene where she pushes the stroller. She's just trying to get rid of the noise, and she goes out into a construction site to just hear, like, sledgehammers yeah. and, or what's the word, like, jackhammers.
Yeah.
And just to hear, like, the noises of construction. And she has a moment of relief, so she doesn't hear a baby cry. And then you hear the baby scream over the construction.
Oh.
And it's just setting into motion, you know, this connection, this, like, zero connection between a mother and a son. And then he ends up, you know, being a school shooter. And
Jesus.
And just the like, the guilt that you have over, like, what did I do or
right.
not do? I mean, you know, with this kid. And then, yeah, sometimes you're just like, wow. I just saw a great, I think I've talked about this one before, and it's coming out in this fall, but it's called My Friend Dahmer. And it's about a guy that went to high school with Jeffrey Dahmer.
I own the graphic novel.
Oh, isn't it? I mean,
it's amazing.
It's amazing. Yes.
It's an incredible book.
Well, that
book.
Guy, it's, you know, and it's fantastic. And it's that's one that's so sad because all the factors that came together to make Jeffrey Dahmer. And, you know, we look at that person as like a complete monster, you know, for good reason, but
right.
it's also like, there's more to the story. And I'm so fascinated by that. Like,
yeah.
I refuse excuse to write somebody off, anybody off, is just like, well, they're evil and I'm good. Well, and you, end of story.
Right. It's like, you hear those stories time and time again about people who do. It's so cyclical. The people who, and there are exceptions to this, but people who do horrible things had horrible things done to them.
Yes.
And so it's really. It's more
learned behavior. And it's one of those things. And then in the most extreme forms, when all these other, you factor in mental illness on top of neglect, on top of abuse, and you put all those things together.
On top of homophobia.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Dahmer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, it is fascinating and, horrifying. Mm-hmm. It's horrifying to make children.
And they're just they're like, concentrated little personalities,
yes,
that haven't yet like sort of diluted into society.
Yes.
So they're just like these like balls of just chaos,
mm-hmm,
that are going every, like, it's so, how do you control that and hope that they grow in a way that's,
I know. I just think,
no one knows.
Yeah. How, Keaton? How do you
well,
do
we
it?
Well, we got to figure it out.
You put
today.
Them in commercials.
That's how
what you
do it.
You prop them up in
it
front of millions of people. And you
let them sell products, and there you go.
And they get residuals, and then,
for college.
Mommy and daddy can go to Maui. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Oh my God, I love this conversation. Well, I want to hear stories. What? Who wants to go first?
Mine's going to bring it not
Please.
Further down. Like, I don't know how possibly we can dive
further into the depths. Oh, I love
into
diving
the depths.
Down. I love it.
No, I've had quite a couple weeks.
Yes.
I just got out of a 9-year relationship.
Oh, wow.
Honey.
Yeah. No, with my first boyfriend, we got together when we were 17. We met in show choir, which was a beautiful time, a beautiful thing. We ended very amicably, and we have nothing but love for each other. But it's like very much a change in every aspect of my existence.
9 years, that's huge, because you're still really young.
I'm 26, yeah.
Yeah,
so
that's huge.
I've never been through a breakup. I've never, like, made decisions for myself in a lot of ways. I'm realizing, like, wow, you have a lot of self-discovery to go through in the next year or so.
Yeah.
But
all the rest of your life,
I mean, forever.
Sure.
But it's going to be a very concentrated period for a while.
Yes,
I'm stumbling over lessons left and right, like, quite literally.
What are some things that you're like, oh my God, it's never occurred to me that...
Well, I mean, so many stupid things, like going grocery shopping. This sounds so ridiculous, but it was both terrifying and exhilarating as I was like, this is for myself entirely. Like, not that I would defer to him, but you're just, when you're with somebody and you are always going to be thinking about them on some level.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when you're really like, oh, this is for me, it was like truly mind blowing.
Are you having a moment of like, well, what do I like?
Completely. It's like, what do I want? And I think I had that moment, and that's why this happened.
Uh-huh.
And it was sort of a choice between like staying in something that was lovely and comfortable in a lot of ways, or choosing sort of your own happiness on some mm-hmm. level.
Sure.
Definitely. But the story that I was going to tell was, I was leaving the gym 2 days after this happened. I go to CrossFit, guys.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we should talk about that for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, I'm kidding.
That'll take up the rest of the whole space.
I was leaving the class, and it was a really exhausting workout, and I was walking back to my car that had been parked a couple blocks away. And as I was walking back, I hadn't stretched properly. I just kind of wanted to like get back into my hole and continue processing my feelings. And so I'm getting to the car, and I sort of pivot on my left foot, and I get like a muscle spasm in my left calf, which is essentially a Charlie horse. Although I thought a Charlie horse was just being punched in the thigh. But it's not. No. It's like
No. I have my right calf. For some reason, when I get them, they only occur in my right calf. And usually early in the morning. For me, I always think it's when I'm a little dehydrated.
Yeah, I guess that's what it was. Or when you overwork it. It lasted about 5 minutes, and it was like
it's
of the most
excruciating.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So
yes.
I didn't know what it
and
was.
You feel it coming on seconds before, and you're like, I'm getting ready to happen. This is getting ready to happen.
I didn't know, because I'd never had it. So I fell to the floor, and I sort of like, I'm already in this like completely fragile state, and I sound like an animal that's been hit by a car or something. I'm like shrieking in the dark on the street. There's no one around. So in this moment,
God.
I'm like, I'm in excruciating pain, and I am so alone.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Sitting there, and I'm just like, I'm holding it and like trying to flex my leg whilst yelling, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, someone needs to come save me. Like, I need to be taken somewhere. And after about a minute or two of just like kind of shouting and trying to...
I'm imagining like the aerial shot of like Sean Penn and Mystic River.
It's exactly
just,
what
like,
it is.
Screaming on the street and the camera pulls
completely.
Up.
And you know everybody in their apartments near there is like... What do you hear that?
Yeah, oh no God. One's, they're all
oh
peering
God,
out the window.
Look outside. Don't look outside. I don't want to know what it is.
Oh
I don't want to know what it is.
I don't want to know. I don't want to be a part of it.
I don't want to be a part of it.
Look,
it
I'm so... trying to, go on my own journey and this screamer's outside.
But literally I'm there and I'm like, okay, think logically. This can't get worse without an impetus. Like nothing is happening that's going to all of a sudden make this more painful. Mm-hmm. So just breathe and just sort of sit there and breathe and self-soothe, and all you can do is breathe and the pain will eventually go away. So yeah. I was very alone and very in pain, and it's very much a metaphor for my life. And I'm like, and that's okay, and that's good, and if you just fucking breathe, it will slowly
subside. You know what? I
love
true.
That. That's beautiful. I mean, it's true. And it's, okay, so the Charlie horse thing, what I've gotten them a lot and over the years. And what I used to do up until recently, and maybe somebody that's listening to this can tell us a better way to handle these things. Because to me, what I used to do is I would just try to relax as much as I could, as best as I could, to just sort of let it all go and just like let it sort of ride my flesh is what it does. And it just sort of like, you know, and I would just sort of like let, you know, and it would go on and on and on. It would probably be, I don't know, 30 seconds, but it would feel like 10 minutes.
Yeah, this was probably
like
a 10 second episode.
Someone like just like stabbing, grinding, pulling, you know, everything terrible. And then I would have a limp for like a day mm-hmm. or two. Like, cause it would, the next day I would feel it and it would just hurt. It would kill. And I would just have to get up and like try to get a water or get a banana or something. It was, I was like potassium or something that I mm-hmm. think I need. Somebody recently told me that you actually should flex your muscle as hard as you can and like fight back against it.
I think that's what I did.
Which is what you're supposed to do from, which I did not know. And I will say the last couple of times I've had them, I've done that and it lasts a lot less long and you're not sore. It's counterintuitive. In my mind, it's always like, I've always sort of had this thing where I'm like, if you're in a car accident, just go limp. Like,
right.
just like
right.
if something happens, just like let it happen because don't fight back against it because, right. you know, the tension in your muscles will make your bones break or whatever. And I don't know where I've, you know, sort of heard that. But in this situation, if there's something about like fighting back against it and just being as strong as you can, that will actually sort of lessen it wards it off and it helps build up the muscle yeah. and that, you know, and I think that's a good metaphor too.
I think it is too. It's a combination sort of like,
fight back.
Yeah, I mean, fight that.
Fight your feelings.
Fight
Don't
your
feel
feelings.
Your feelings.
No, I think it's like be strong.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
it's like when this is happening, you're like, you know, it's happening. Acknowledge it and be like, all right, I'm here for this world. I'm here for this life, and you're doing this to me right now. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna like sort of fight back instead of just like giving up and going whatever. And yes, there is something in like relax, breathe,
correct.
Get through it. You will be fine. But there's, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think it's just interesting that it's like, no, in this situation, you know,
you're supposed to, yeah,
yeah, and it's just like you know, and do that. I mean, Yeah, so ultimately, I love that you guys are amicable because
yeah.
you're both lovely, and
I
love that
thing.
You guys made that decision. But it's also, it has to be this feeling of like who am I when I'm
completely.
Going out?
Yeah.
Do you find that like when you go out, are you like going out with friends? Are you staying at home a lot?
Luckily, I've had like a lot of great support, and I tend to be that person for people that. Like helps people through stuff, which I didn't really
yeah.
realize until this happened, where they're like,
yeah.
you were indispensable during my breakup. And I'm like,
aww.
Oh, really? Cool.
That's sweet.
Great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I've had a lot of support. Therapy is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I endorse it wholeheartedly.
mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, my family's here too, which is nice.
Yes. Yes.
But kind of strange because family can kind of make it about them in some ways. I went and visited the first night. Right after it happened, I went home and they were so upset because he's a part of our family that it made me more upset. I was okay, I have to leave now. Like this
God.
Was a mistake. but yeah, I'm just trying to be compassionate with everybody, him and them, everybody. It's just
right,
like, you know.
Right. And you've got to be with yourself too.
And
just be like where it is because there is a loss there. And it's like you're allowed to like go through mourning.
Yeah.
You know, and just be like, this is a, you know, as much as this is ultimately the best decision and everything works out really well and nobody's dead, but you still feel like there's this thing that we had together that, you know, and you have every right to feel that, like, you know, and this is like a new chapter, and it is really scary.
Everything is foreign, so that's what's weird. There's no routine, everything is different, and it can be exhilarating in moments, which is nice, because it's like, I'm kind of starting to experience that positivity, or just possibility itself is exciting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that's super relatable when it comes to people in this industry. It's like, possibility is the most exciting thing in the world.
Yeah.
Before you even get something, or you think it, whatever. So that's my life right now in all fronts.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to really honor everything that I'm feeling, and also just be open to everything.
That's great. It sounds like you're doing a great job.
I mean, I'm not crying now, but talk to me in an hour. It's very, very much comes in waves, and every song I've ever heard in the last 9 years, that's cool too.
No, that's that's great. I'm very proud of you for doing that, because that's huge.
Weird.
But. To do that. And I also think, you know, as somebody who's been single most of my life, I'm in the opposite sense of like, if I got in a relationship, it would be a whole, I would have to be like trained how to be part of, how to be in a part of a union, you know, just being like, oh, I need to let you know where I'm going to be.
Right.
I need to pick out cereal that you might want to eat. Mm-hmm. I need to, you know, just think about us. I'm going to go see this thing. I should get 2 tickets to this thing.
Right.
You know, I should ask you if you want to go before I just decide. Right. I mean, I'm such a you know, one man band that I would just be like, oh, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do this. And I'm going to do that. And, you know, just it's a real training process to you know.
I'm going through the opposite, because it's jarring, because I was 17, so I've never been an adult that was on my own in this way.
Yeah.
And I think I am a person
who... You guys watched your first R-rated movie together.
We did. Just when we turned 17. I'm very other-oriented as a person, so I tend to, like, I've realized, again, in therapy, that I tend to, like, gauge my happiness based on other people. So it's like... And that's very much a child actor thing, I think, in a lot of ways.
Oh, sure. Sure.
We wanting to please. But that is not a good way to live your life. It's not very healthy. Yeah. So I think that's another thing. I'm like, okay, what do you want? Let's figure that out.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to look back, and I know this is going to sound like such an old man thing to say, but you will look back and be like, oh my God, I was so young.
I completely.
You know, I mean, you know, it's like, you're not going to be like, okay, 26 and the end of the road.
Just the older you get, the more you realize that you don't know shit.
Oh, absolutely.
You're a big, dumb baby who knows nothing.
Oh, right, so that's, exactly.
And then as soon as you think you do, the universe like smacks
you down
again. The
universe goes, wait, nope.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. Oh, I love that.
Fun.
Yeah,
fun.
Mary Holland.
I recently rent on a...
Okay, I'd really love to have your own voice. You know, like,
no, I have a really good character I'd like to do.
Keaton just opened up his heart.
I know, but I have a really good character.
No, but...
I recently went on a Cambie character trip, and it was really good.
Ew.
I recently went on a camping trip.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. I went with my best friend Catherine. We went to a very secluded part of Sequoia National Park.
Oh, fun.
It's beautiful. And we did these really intense hikes.
You're both from here. I mean, she lives here too? Or
She actually lives in London, but her family lives in Northern California.
Oh, okay,
so she comes back to California a lot. And neither of us had really camped before, but we did a ton of research, and, you know, it was car camping, so it wasn't too intense, but
So what's car camping? What does that mean?
It's just when you have your car at the campsite.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's not like we're hiking and...
Got it. Okay.
And making a campsite.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's like there's, you know, you got a fire pit and a little grate, and, you know, it's like a lot of the amenities are taken care of.
Right.
But the hikes we did were really intense, and the thought that I've been having recently in this moment on the mountain, I think, was like that sort of coming out of me. We were at a pretty high altitude, so maybe it was also the altitude. But we were like in the middle of a hike and just quietly, you know, exerting ourselves. And I suddenly was like, I turned to her and I was like, I'm having a little bit of anxiety. And she was like, oh, really? And I was like, I'm going to cry. And I just started crying. And it felt like a sneeze, but it was a sob. And I was like, I just started sobbing.
Uh-huh.
And there was no like thoughts in my head. It just kind of like, it was just pure, just a release of something. Mm-hmm. And wow. I think it's, there's so many things, the unknowableness of the future.
Uh-huh.
And then also the, with me, I think that anxiety was like related to, I'm not someone who's super self-assured and confident. And, I don't feel that I totally know who I am, mm-hmm. or I don't feel like a strong sense of my identity. I do in moments, and then
which kind of puts you leagues
away.
Beyond people that really, really think they do.
Yeah,
I mean, that self-awareness is knowing that you don't know.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's
yeah, it's true. And it's so funny to hear you say that, because on stage you're so incredibly confident, and you play.
Oh,
I mean, I just saw you in this amazing play called A Void, and you killed it. You just played such a layered, complicated mess with such ferocity. I mean, you were
you took over.
You were just so in charge.
Thank you. That means
that,
a lot.
Of that moment. So yeah. It's so interesting to hear you say in person that you have this, you know, I love that. I love hearing that, because it's so, I would never think of you in that way. I would never say, like, you know.
Yeah. There's something about, and I'm sure we all feel this way, as actors, like, where there's such a safe zone on stage where
yes.
you can just fully live in that moment.
Yep.
And you sort of have the freedom of, like, this is this character's choice. And I'm
uh-huh.
like fully committing to that.
Yes.
And like this thought I had on the mountain was like, I don't know what's in store for me, and I also like I don't know that I can be alone with my thoughts, if that makes sense. That's
uh-huh.
the thought I had on my own was, I don't know if I can just be alone with myself, and
uh-huh.
which is weird, because I consider myself an introvert. I love people, but I need to be alone to like recharge, and
yes,
I crave solitude.
Yes, me too.
But at the same time, I crave a sort of social solitude, if that makes sense, where
mm-hmm.
I'm in the world, mm-hmm. and I'm still like, I know I'm secure in my friends and in my family. Like I sort of know I have this social support and network,
mm-hmm.
but I'm good in that kind of solitude, but when it comes to really being alone inside my head, I'm just, there's a part of me that's so worried that it's just vacant, that it's just like
no.
empty in there.
Well,
how many
opportunities do we really get to be alone on the side of a mountain away from society?
I mean,
that might be that too. It's like that feeling of like, I haven't had this experience in so long. My body doesn't even know how to react in this moment.
Yeah.
I don't have enough things coming at me. I'm in the middle of this like really peaceful, beautiful place. And now I have to think like, who am I? Where am I? And I haven't checked in a while. I mean, I think there's a lot of that. I mean, that I can sort of understand where, you know, you get to a point where you're like, our lives are go, 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 go. And we're also living, we are told to want that, to go, go,
mm-hmm.
go. And ultimately we do want that.
Yeah.
So it's like all that is like all ultimately good. And then, you know, even when you take a vacation somewhere, it's like, we have to go here, we have to go here, we have to go here,
mm-hmm.
we have to get to this point, to this point, to this point. And you're not really just like reflecting.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a comfort always, and maybe especially for people who have jobs or careers or lives where there's not much stability, or it's where it's like there's such, I think we crave plans in
uh-huh.
a way, even like mentally, like I crave knowing what I'm gonna think about versus like having nothing,
right?
And just sitting in that, and
yeah,
you know,
but you feel exposed.
Yeah, it's a weird,
yes.
it's a really weird feeling of not like, because even when I crave solitude on my like I'll like go to a movie by myself or go
yeah,
to dinner
too.
By myself and read, and like even that's a plan of like
absolutely
what I'm doing versus just having suddenly nothing. And what are you left with? And I don't know that I like what I'm left with. I think that's going to be like a journey, is like figuring out how do you like what you're left with when all of that's gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's such a good question for all of us, because I think we all, you know, we surround ourselves with things. And like, I'm the same with you. I will schedule solitary time. And I've had
me too.
You know, a friend of mine who basically says you have to, like, one day a month, you have to just not be available for anybody. And it might be a Wednesday. Yeah. It might be a Sunday, whatever day it is, doesn't matter. But you have to just have a day where you just don't. And that's hard to do. And it's also in our lives because we don't have much stability, you know, as actors, and, you know, and just trying to like get work whenever we can and sort of enjoy the downtime. And like, you should be writing when you're, you know, or you should be. But even scheduling that one day is, mm-hmm. like you said, it's a plan. And on that day, I will most likely go to a movie, mm-hmm. or get a massage, or maybe both, mm-hmm. or I will go to the gym. I'll have something to do that is good for me ultimately,
yeah.
but it's still a plan.
Exactly.
It's not just sitting there and enjoying like nothing.
Well, and just your own thoughts.
Yes.
It's the complete like lack. I don't know if this is, it might be kind of related, but it sort of is like the complete lack of validation. Like, we get validation
right.
from other people.
Yes. For sure.
Especially yes. when it is what we do. It's like, and you know how to go talk to somebody at a coffee shop and be charming and have this mm-hmm. whole conversation. And it was like satisfying for some reason with the barista or whoever uh-huh. it is, you know, uh-huh. and it's a little snippet of validation. But when you're truly by yourself, you have to validate yourself.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Because I, even in that moment when I had that breakdown, you know, Catherine was holding on to me and was being very, so I felt like she was there. She was totally validating me, but there was no one inside my head being like, I feel like there's just a perpetual question for me of like, am I good? Am I doing things the way I want to be? What do I want? Is what I want good? Is like, what is this? Like, I'm not able to do that for myself yet.
Like, mm-hmm. you will be able to. I mean, we're all
God
working
bless.
On it.
Yeah, we are, absolutely.
Majorly what I'm
thing.
Doing right now too. Like,
yeah.
And that's why we seek, that's why social media, I think, is such a thing, because it is that like, even if I'm alone, I can post a picture of myself being alone and then I get validation.
Yeah, I get likes
that.
And people yeah. like it. And then they comment and they're like, oh, someone said that I haven't heard from in a while. Or, you know, yeah. yes, I know. It is so crazy. And it is something that like, why I love doing this show, because it's like, I love hearing from people and being able, like, for them to share and for me to be able to relate. And it's like, we relate, you know, you're like, you do think you're alone in these sort of moments. And then you're like, oh, we all are sort of going towards that, and we all yeah. want that ultimately, like whether on whatever conscious or subconscious level, we want to be good and we want to feel okay and we want to be headed towards the right things.
Yeah.
I mean, not just on a surface level or on a material level, but on an emotional and spiritual level
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
You know?
And how do you know if you're heading the right way? Like, it's all so, yeah. you just have to be so comfortable with
not being uncomfortable.
Knowing.
Right.
I mean, it's a thing that like, you know, and I just sound like, a, you know, and you know, from doing so much improv, it's like you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And that's mm-hmm. the thing where you're like that unknown place is the most interesting place.
Yeah.
And it's the scariest place. It's why like, you know, and it's I sound like a cult leader when I talk about doing improv. But, you know, when you see some of the biggest mistakes that people make in improv is that they want to talk too much about the past,
mm-hmm.
or they want to talk too much about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a really hard time being in the present, because that's the scary point. But that's the interesting point,
right.
is the
yes.
present. The right now is what's interesting. You know, and I always say like in improv, and it's in the, and I think it's true in life, is that the past is a little bit important. The past is good, because it's going to help you inform now, and it's going to these experiences
right.
will stay with you, and memories are good, and all those sort of things. It's like, you know, you should, the past is very helpful to an extent, and I think the present is of infinite importance, and it's everywhere we need to be, and the future is of zero importance,
right?
Because talking
right.
about
fantasy.
What's it's a fantasy, and it's yeah, to talk about what's going to happen, and the people do all the time on stage, they'll say, you know, stop doing that. Mom's going to come in here and she's going to be really mad
right.
at you, and it's going to get really crazy in a minute. Right now, we're just talking about what's going to happen. And in life, you know, how boring if if the future turns out to be exactly what you predicted? And you know it won't be, you know? And we do that. We talk about the future in order to help ourselves process. And I do it all the time.
And prepare.
Almost every day I'm in the shower, I think about the next couple days, what I have.
Me too.
You know, and I'm like, okay, so then I'll do this, and then I have this, and then I have this, and this the next day. And it's this weird sort of, I've always made lists as a kid, and it was always a thing for comforting me. But I also know, like, anything can happen, and I won't be doing any of those things, and I'll be, life will thrust me into this other place.
Yeah.
And the thought of that is terrifying. Yeah. But you're also like, but that's going to happen whether I, no matter how many lists I want to make, or how much I want to control that, I'm not in charge, you know? And sort of, it's really nice to just kind of say, you know, and then also to check in with yourself. I'm trying to be a little bit about, I'm so bad about overbooking myself and doing a lot of shows or going to everybody's parties or just doing all these things because I really do enjoy it on some level. But I've tried lately just to be like, okay, there's no way I'm going to make it all the way across town to make a 5-minute appearance and then come all the way back over to do this other thing. And I'm making myself crazy and nobody really cares.
Right.
Like, I mean, I want it for my selfish reasons of going to somebody's party because I want to see the people there and I enjoy it. So it's not like, oh, I have to really, you know, go against my desires and show up at this party person's house or party, or whatever. But you're like, ultimately, I've got to take care. Like, maybe I'll just, like, take a breath. Maybe I'll just not stress getting to this other thing. Maybe I'll, you know, just kind of sit and do nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
How can you hone that inner voice that really is communicating with you what you really want in that moment versus taking into consideration what everyone else wants and what you think they want, what you want from them. And like, what do you, quieting everything so that you can, and I suppose that's what meditation is that it like brings you in the moment. You suddenly, that inner voice is turned up and you learn to get comfortable listening to it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And it's okay to say no. It's okay to change plans.
Yeah.
It's okay to just take care because ultimately, like, people, we think that everyone has these expectations of us, but we put it on ourselves to where, like, nobody wins when we're all, like, crazy and running around and you know, and stressing out. And, like, you can look at everything. And that's why we look at other people and we don't see, like, all their, you know, like, how hard it is to be them because we think, oh, it must be easy. I think we think, like, I have to do this, this, and this. I'm like, you really don't have to. You don't have to do anything, you know. And I think I've talked about this before, but I've lately, and you know, it's been so therapeutic, is this adult coloring book that I have.
Oh, yeah.
Which is meditative.
Meditative, and I love it. And I try to do it, if I can, like at least like 30 minutes to an hour a day. And it is this thing where I'm like, I turn my phone off. I actually have to set an alarm because I'll just get locked in and I'll do it for hours. Well, there was one day that I did it for like 3 hours. And I was like, oh my God, I had to finish. It was like finishing the hat. Like I had to finish the hat. And it was just that thing where you're just like, I'm obsessed with these colors and how to get this right. And then I'm like, okay, I can't do this every day of my life because I'll start to be super weird. But I will say I've been at social situations and I'm like, I want to go home and color.
I miss my color. Yeah.
It's so weird. But I'm like, it activates this different part of my brain and I'm not having to talk. I'm not having to engage. But I'm also like, I'm lost in my own thoughts the whole time. I'm not like sitting there. It's also because you're just coloring. So you're not really doing anything.
You're not agonizing over the coloring.
No, you're really not. At the most, you're going, okay, should that be like red or purple? It's not really anything.
Should I do a hard outline and then a soft inside?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, like my favorite.
Yeah.
Do some nice shading.
See, I'm a marker person myself. I like to outline. And then I like to color within each line.
It's
like, that's very soothing to me. Like to do that, you know, what are we talking about? But it's kind of nice because it mushes your brain, you know, it just does something else that you just kind of, and I do, I feel like I've gotten some deep conversations with myself over that. Or I try to go for, it's like the same as like going for a really nice walk by yourself, when you can just go for a walk and be like, I'm just going to go for this walk with no, and I have to slow myself down because I can always be in such a hurry to like get the walk done and then I have to come do this.
Exactly.
And it's like, no, just go for a walk.
Enjoy it for itself. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the thing I want to experiment with a little bit more is like not letting myself listen to anything.
Yeah,
not
music,
letting
no
myself.
Podcast.
No podcast. Just me and my surroundings. Like I've been reading this book called A Field Guide to Getting Lost.
Uh-huh.
And it sort of pertains to this thing. But it's all about how, as artists, you need to like lose yourself, be comfortable with the getting lost and not knowing where. I mean, it's everything we've been talking about. But she described this Native American tribe that would would not refer to their left arm or their right arm. They would refer based on where they are in the world, their west arm or their east arm or their north arm or their south arm. So it was, there is no them without their surroundings.
Oh,
like,
wow.
They're fully oriented to like where they are in the world. And it made me realize like, oh my God, I will go a whole day and not think about where I am.
Of course not. Yeah.
Like, and also,
we're so
engage.
Not trained that way. Yeah. We're so...
Also, like, could I even do that?
If you ask me,
which one, I don't know.
I'm not a compass in that way.
I know. And I would love to be. I would love to, like, get grounded and orient myself in the world. And maybe that would help orient myself in my thoughts.
No, I love that. I love it. Well, I think we're almost out of time. So I just want to... recap what we've, I mean, this is pretty huge today. This is pretty big.
We covered a lot of territory.
We did cover a lot. You know, children are fucked and adults need to just be where they are
alone. With who
they, alone.
Adults need to be better and
children need to just go away. No, but I think there's something really wonderful about just like sort of, you know, taking that time to just unplug and just to, and have and dealing with no thought. You know, that's a real yoga thing too. It's like, it's not, it's like you have a thought, let it drift away. Don't force it down. Don't like reject it. Just like acknowledge it and like let it go and just sort of like and just being comfortable with nothing and knowing that that's something. You know, because that's the thing that we don't value that enough.
Yeah.
Gosh. Right?
Gosh. Well, I'm going to think this over.
Self-reflection.
I know. It started with how lovely voices you both had, and then it turned into this, like, nothing.
It turned into a whisper.
And then we became dust. I love it. It's that's been great. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
for being on
for
the show.
I want to
thank Mary Holland and Keaton Savage for being on the show. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for that's been another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Have a week.
Feral Audio.